Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. In our first case this morning, 2023-0610, a matter of the State of Ohio, City of Obits versus Michael Stinziano, Franklin County Auditor, and Cheryl Brooks Sullivan, Franklin County Treasurer. On behalf of the relator, Mr. Schief, did I pronounce it correctly?
Correct.
You may begin. Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Kennedy, Justice of the Supreme Court, Counsel, I am Judge Schief. I'm here today on behalf of your relator, the City of Obits. This case is a case about separation of powers and the authority of the auditor and treasurer to do what they've done in this case. As one of the justices on this court has aptly written, the separation of powers is paramount to the implementation of our laws in the state of Ohio, in the United States, and it's imperative that everyone stay in your lane. This is about the auditor and treasurer staying in their lane. Attorney General DeWine in 2016 wrote the following: once a tax is levied and collected, no statute authorizes the auditor upon discovering an erroneous assignment to reallocate funds already distributed. That's exactly what's happened in this case. The auditor and the treasurer have unilaterally taken authority that they don't have. So what's this about? This court in McCain affirmed the Board of Tax Appeals decision denying the exemption for the Goodyear TIF. What should have happened was the property should have been put back on the tax rolls, then delinquency notices sent to Goodyear, and those funds collected from Goodyear, leaving the issue between Goodyear and the City of Obits to resolve. But what we have now is a scrambled egg. In the course, and I want to back up for a second, because it took 7 pages for the respondent to get to their argument, because the first 7 pages were devoted to suggesting that somehow, some way, the City of Obits was taking money that it knew it shouldn't take. It was Obits that discovered the error. It was Obits that brought this to everyone's attention. It was Obits that tried to correct the problem. So at Exhibit A5 of our facts, we write, the City of Obits writes, you're acting sloppy. The proper method would be to entail and notify the taxpayers that the tax exemptions in the several prior years have been revoked and that the bill will be forthcoming. That would have resolved all the problems. That would have not allowed anybody to unilaterally take action that they shouldn't take, bring lawsuits that they shouldn't have to take. It would have been very clean, but more importantly, that is what the Ohio legislature commanded. Why is an attorney general opinion so important? We've heard that you're not bound by an Ohio attorney general decision or decisions in this particular case, because there's not one going the other way. It's important because the attorney general's office devotes the most knowledgeable people that it has on staff.
Let me ask you to switch gears a little bit, because I understand your legal arguments about the auditor's authority, but this is a writ action, so you have to meet the requirements for an extraordinary writ. One of the requirements, or one of the things that we have often said, is that mandamus will not lie for the anticipated non-performance of a duty, which generally means that you can't get rid of mandamus for something in the future. You have to have a present right to present right to that action. So here we're talking about, I think what you've asked for is that for the next tax year, that requiring the auditor to follow the law is in your view and disperse money to the city. So what can you tell us about why is that not an anticipated non-performance? Why is there an actual non-performance of a duty here?
It's, Justice DeWine, it's actually more akin to, I would respectfully suggest, an anticipatory repudiation of a contract. The auditor has announced its intention not to distribute funds, and as we stand here...
So I thought I saw something in the evidence where the auditor said it hadn't made any decisions about what it was going to do next year.
Right, as of we, right now, they're withholding an additional $200,000.
Is that in the record?
It just happened.
Okay.
So it's not in the record.
Yes. Have you moved, or are you moving to supplement the record to show that?
I just learned this, but we will move to supplement the record. But let me suggest that this is also, we brought a writ of prohibition, and the writ of prohibition is to prevent.
The writ of prohibition only applies to a judicial act, right? That seems like a pretty hard, hard hill for you to climb.
The auditor and the treasurer have made themselves judge, jury, and executioner in this case. I would suggest respectfully that this is a quasi-judicial act that they've taken, in the fact that they've decided without any judicial review how much is owed and unilaterally taken the action on their own behalf, so that it is akin to a judicial proceeding and writ of prohibition ought to and should lie in this case.
Is there any amount of discretion in determining what the amount is?
I'm sorry, Justice Brenner.
Does it require the use of discretion, or is it just a calculation to determine the amount?
It is a calculation to determine the amount, which, by the way, we do disagree with the amounts that have already been withheld, but that's not an issue before the court. But I want to address that because it's been raised by opposing counsel. But it is a calculated amount. There's no amount of discretion that should be involved in that.
Thank you.
Justice.
Back to the writ of prohibition for a second.
Yes, Justice Fisher.
What is the judicial act that your opponents did?
The judicial act is to make a determination as to the amount of taxes that are due. The unilateral determination that those taxes are ought to be collected and due and owing, and the decision to unilaterally enforce that. Again, they've made themselves the judge, the jury, and the executioner in this case, usurping the authority that they have because they don't have this authority. And respectfully, I'm reluctant, I'm hesitant. I don't know what remedy we have if it doesn't lie in mandamus or a writ of prohibition, because a declaratory judgment and a mandatory injunction, as this court has over and over again found, is not adequate in this kind of a circumstance. So we have a right without a remedy unless we have an action in mandamus that lies, or writ of prohibition, or else we're going to be back here every year doing the same thing over and over and over again.
But you're all in Franklin County, and so why couldn't a Franklin County Common Pleas court decision decide the matter?
Was this court determined in the Lorraine case, there's no indication that the tax commissioner, the auditor or the treasurer would continue to abide by a decision that's made. It would, and that in the particular circumstance, seeking a mandatory injunction from a common pleas court on an issue of this type.
Sorry, I was talking about declaratory judgment.
Okay, and the reason I said mandatory injunction, because all the cases in this court say you don't have an adequate remedy at law unless there's a mandatory injunction coupled with a declaratory judgment action. And even then, it's not an adequate remedy at law.
You're telling me the treasurer or the auditor wouldn't have to follow an order of the Common Pleas Court in the county where they exist?
They ought to follow the orders of the Common Pleas Court, but as this court found in the Lorraine decision, There's no indication, and there was every possibility, that the auditor might not follow the order of a Franklin County decision. And once again, that brings us back to, do I have an adequate remedy at law in that situation, in that I would have to come back over and over and over again?
Well, if you're saying that this is, that our decision, if we were, I guess I'm not understanding why we're even talking about an auditor or a treasurer in another county following a decision of a court in Franklin County when the auditor and the treasurer and OBETs are all located in Franklin County.
The decision in Lorain wasn't a decision that came out of the Franklin County Common Police Court. It came out of the Lorain County Common Police Court. And so it was a decision of a court sitting in the jurisdiction of the county where the auditor resided. And that's why I've cited the case. This court, we have every element necessary for a writ of mandamus here, in that we have a clear legal right to the funds that are owing to us.
So there what is the clear legal duty of the auditor and the treasurer? What's the clear legal duty? There's a two-part, clear legal right, clear legal duty. What is their clear legal duty?
They're corollaries of each other, Justice Bruner. The clear legal right that we have is the clear legal duty, under Revised Code 32131 says that the county treasurer shall pay to us the money that's owing. It says shall pay. It doesn't say do your own analysis and then pay what you think is owed. Do a reallocation and pay what you have concluded is owed. It says shall pay. It doesn't say may pay. That's the clear legal right that we have, legal duty that the treasurer and the auditor have. They're corollaries of one another.
Except if money went to OBETs that wasn't due to OBETs, you're just saying that because then the auditor would have actually violated that duty in 2015, 2016, and 2017. So you're saying that should just be ignored and the auditor shouldn't do anything to remedy the situation.
I'm not saying, Your Honor, that that should be ignored. I'm saying that the auditor shouldn't do anything to remedy the situation because it does not have the statutory authority to do what it's done in this case, and the separation of powers is so important. What should have happened, as I articulated at the beginning, is that the property should have been returned to the tax rolls, and the amount of money that the Goodyear owed based on taxes should have been declared delinquent, and the auditor and the treasurer, if instructed by the tax commissioner, should have gone and collected that money, leaving for OBETs and Goodyear to sort out between themselves the result of the overpayment instead of the allocation to various entities and the potential actions going back between the entities. We've got a scrambled egg here that it's impossible to unscramble unless we get a writ of mandamus or a writ of prohibition to stop it. But I'm not saying ignore it. We brought it to everyone's attention. We're the ones that said there's a problem here. We wanted to fix it. But the way to fix it isn't to just go on a frolic and detour. The way to fix it is the way the Ohio legislature has prescribed for it to be fixed. And that's what we're respectfully suggesting needs to happen in this case.
Well, and I think your solution makes sense, but how do we grant you that relief? I guess going back to the question in mandamus. I mean, you have to have a clear legal right to what you're requesting in mandamus.
Justice Stewart, I think, once again, we do have a clear legal right under the Ohio Revised Code to have this money distributed to us. Now,
even though it's an overpayment.
That for the auditor to suggest that it was an overpayment is the heart of the judicial proceedings that Justice DeWine was talking about. And that at the time, that's making a determination that it was an overpayment. It starts with the tax commissioner making a decision, which was not made, other than to return the property to the tax rolls. Then if the commissioner decides that the tax is delinquent, to go and collect the tax from Goodyear. That's the way to remedy the situation. We have never suggested that we have a right to this money. What we're suggesting respectfully, what we're urging respectfully, is that there's a way to do it, and the way to do it is the way the Ohio legislature has commanded that it be done. If we have tax bonds. There's no predictability if we have an auditor or a treasurer that can take matters into their own hands outside the course and scope of the Ohio Revised Code to implement this.
And we're running quickly out of time, so just let me, if you walk through again, what are the exact procedures that you think should happen here in detail, or what should have been done?
Okay. What should have been done is that as the result of this court's decision in McCain, the property should have been returned to the tax rolls. Once the property was returned to the tax rolls, there would have been a delinquency for the years 2016 and 2017. Then the tax commissioner should have declared the delinquency and went and collected the delinquent taxes from Goodyear, because under Ohio Revised Code 272305, the fact that Goodyear paid that money does not obviate or eliminate the fact that it's a delinquent tax because they paid on a void or illegal TIF in that circumstance. So the tax commissioner and the auditor and the treasurer should have pursued Goodyear, and then Goodyear and Obetz could have negotiated how are we going to resolve this, instead of all these different municipalities, all these different governmental entities, all these other entities that we have to sort out the money and do the allocation. It would have been very clean. It would have been the way the Ohio legislature prescribed, and the way it's been done now is without the authority of the Ohio Revised Code. And I see my time has expired. Thank you.
On behalf of the respondents, Mr. Ristow. Good morning.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court. As you just heard, the clear legal duty at issue in this case is a duty that arose after the real estate tax settlement process concluded. So the real issue here is whether the auditor has authority to correct errors in apportionment during the settlement process. And we heard from Obetz that the auditor has pursued self-help remedies that are not prescribed in the revised code. But in fact, the legislature has specifically addressed the problem presented here today in two separate contexts. First, there's a general authority to correct errors in the apportionment of real property taxes. The plain language of 31944 grants that authority generally, and it applies directly in this case. 31944 governs how a county auditor is to perform their twice-a-year settlement process. As part of that mandatory statutory settlement process,
How do you get that from the plain? I mean, you keep saying the plain language of 31944, but as I read it, all 31944 says is after first correcting any error which may have occurred in the apportionment of taxes, the previous settlement, the county auditor shall certify the balance to the state, the balance to the county. I mean, this seems to speak to correcting errors in the certification process. It doesn't seem there's nothing in here that gives the county auditor this broad authority that you are claiming.
Respectfully, I mean, Your Honor,
this is kind of the hiding elephants and mouse hole problem, right? I mean, if the legislature wanted to give that kind of authority, don't you think they would have been a little more specific?
Respectfully, I believe that language has been the controlling language for settlement since 1881, when it was first amended into the revised statutes. The auditor is following a process of settlement. So the settlement process includes, and it's laid out in 31943 and 44 and 45, it includes preparation of a delinquency list. It includes calculation of the amount of taxes available for distribution. That's what the first part of 31944 is talking about. You're calculating the amount of taxes available for distribution in that settlement. You're taking the total amount from the tax list, You're deducting the delinquencies and the fees, and that's the total amount that the auditor, or that the auditor has available for distribution. After that, after you know how much is to be distributed, you correct errors in previous apportionments, and then you calculate the apportionment for this settlement. That's the process.
And you get all that from that one phrase here.
Correct, and it's supported by the decision in Staley. Staley's actually a great case study of how this authority works from the 1882, when the decision came out. That's 1 year after the authority was first amended into the statute. Staley's discussion of the facts walks through exactly how the arithmetic works, how the settlement process works. It lays out that the auditor is to first calculate the amount available for distribution. Staley talks about how the next step authorizes the auditor to correct any error in apportionment. And Staley even specifically acknowledges that in exercising that authority, the auditor can deduct the amount otherwise distributable to one taxing district, so long as that same amount is added to the amount distributable to a different taxing district. So I do think that that's all in the plain language. And 45 even acknowledges that what you're doing in 43 and 44 includes a calculation of apportionment.
What about Mr. Sheaf's response to this, that there was overreach here by the auditor, that the proper procedure would have been for to declare delinquency, have Goodyear and Obetz work this out, but not the action that was taken here?
Right, yeah, so again, the 31944 is the general. You're talking about the specific. So revised code 323.133B outlines exactly what the auditor must do upon receipt of a tax commissioner's final determination. What McLean did was affirm the tax commissioner's final determination in this case. So upon receipt of the McLean decision affirming the tax commissioner's determination, 323.133B governs the process. So what does that statute require? It requires to correct the tax list. It also requires that the auditor determine if an overpayment was made. It specifically delegates to the auditor the authority and discretion to determine if an overpayment was made.
Okay, so but that determination doesn't clearly state the auditor then has the authority to do everything else that happened.
Okay, well, the next section of 323.133B says if an overpayment was made, you apply the process in 57.15.22 does exactly say that. It says first you adjust the liability of the taxpayer, but it also requires the back end correction of the consequences of the errors in the tax list. It says that you must correct the errors in apportionment by deducting the amount of the overpayment from the amount that was otherwise distributable to the party who benefited, the taxing district that benefited from the overpayment. It's right there, 57.15.22 specifically walks through how the auditor got to where we are. 57.15.22 is applicable by direct reference in 323.133B.
So walk me through why it's important for the auditor to collect those taxes and redistribute those. I mean, is it because the auditor is not just the auditor for Franklin County of just that portion of Obetz, because the taxes that were...
Correct, Your Honor.
So can you explain that in a little more detail better than I can?
Sure. When Obetz receives millions of dollars in tax revenues to which it was never entitled, that money necessarily doesn't make it to taxing districts such as Children's Services, Office of the Aging, the Board of Developmental Disabilities, and eight other taxing districts that provide essential services to taxpayers. When the money goes to Obetz, it doesn't go to them. So this error correction process that the legislature specifically set forth allows the auditor to claw back those erroneous overpayments that went to a party who did not deserve them, and it allows the auditor to correct the error by redistributing them to the taxing districts who are entitled to the money. And these are taxes that were levied for a specific purpose. Taxpayers authorized the levying of these taxes so they benefit these affected taxing jurisdictions. And so the General Assembly has created a specific process to allow this recapture of erroneous distributions. And this process of the correction of the tax list and how it corresponds with correction of the errors in apportionment is set forth in the entire structure of the settlement process. So there's been reference to 319, 35, and 36. So that deals with correction of errors on the tax list. When 319.44 deals with errors in apportionment. The tax list has errors that affect the taxpayer. So we're gonna talk, those would be errors in valuation, errors in exemption status, errors in the identity of the taxpayer. The problem that could arise requiring a change in the tax list are problems that impact the taxpayer and the taxpayer's liability. So there is a error correction process that the legislature has developed to correct the tax list.
Okay, say we disagree with you on that. Say that we just don't think that these lines in the statute can do all the work that you want to do, and that the auditor is supposed to do this. Is supposed to pay out these funds every year? Are they entitled to an extraordinary writ?
No.
Why not?
There is no clear legal duty violated, regardless of whether.
Okay. Well, assume there is. I mean, the statute, at least in their reading, says they're supposed to.
Okay. So if we're assuming that the duty element is satisfied. And presumably
So I guess what I'm really interested in is your the discussion about anticipated non-performance of a duty.
With regard to the forward-looking remedy, I would agree with Your Honor. The writ of
I don't have an opinion, but
okay. I would agree that the court has established that anticipated non-performance cannot be cured in a writ of mandamus. That is exactly what's going on.
Well, so is the auditor going to withhold this money in the future?
It makes a determination based on the facts presented at each future settlement. We don't know. Again, our version of the statute requires that the auditor collect the information at settlement and make determinations on apportionment.
Argument that you're required by law to do this? That you don't have a choice?
Correct, but that's based on the faxes that present themselves at the settlement.
The fax aren't going to change, right?
I guess they could. There could be other changes in exemption status. There could be other changes, clerical errors that need to be corrected. There could be BOR cases that come through that require changes. So and that's why this process is so so unclear, that it is not the crystal clear process they assert.
Well, absent a change of law or OBET's voluntarily writing you a check, the facts aren't going to change that there's a discrepancy.
I guess my point is that the apportionment process is entangled with all other facts. So there's revenues that come in and there's revenues that are distributed.
But none of those facts are going to affect this, right? I mean,
it could affect the distribution of OBETs generally. Would it affect this issue? Perhaps not.
Give me one concrete fact that could affect that.
TIF exemption is filed for OBETs?
Mr. Bistow, in 2017, it was discovered that for 3 years they'd been collecting this, and when OBETs notified the then auditor, who was not Mr. Cinziano, someone in Mr. Cinziano's office, deputy auditor, said that the county auditor had erroneously determined the exemption to have a 30-year duration. So you had a 2-year period before Mr. Cinziano took office where this didn't occur, what is at issue today. So do you know why the facts were different then from now? It's apparent to me from the record that an auditor could, apparently the auditor before Mr. Cinziano decided not to go after these funds.
It had improperly applied its accounting system and misconstrued the length of the TIF application and the exemption and the governing ordinance. That was the issue at issue. That was the question at issue in McLean, whether the exemption expired in 2014 or not. The auditor at the time for tax years 2015 and 16 misconstrued that and did not consider the property taxable, considered the property exempt. So
but
that's
my,
why it
my
needed
question
a correction.
Is then from 2017 to 2019, that auditor didn't make the effort to collect or to settle according to what Mr. Cinziano
did.
So
some of the internal requirements for what you're talking about were implemented in 2017, and actually that's in the certifications that are Exhibit C of our respondents' evidence. Those certifications show that the tax list was corrected and some of the taxpayer liability was adjusted. The external issue was not implemented at that time because there was a pending application to re-TIF it, which if granted would have not required this implementation that has been done here. So rather than
except
process
the tax commissioner said, but you don't get to have it retroactive for the years that you shouldn't have collected it.
And so I think what happened was the auditor was implementing the internal processes and waiting for a final determination from the tax commissioner and this court as to whether they should fully implement that. And once that decision came down, then they fully implemented that, impacting the external downstream consequences in apportionment. And I think the practical reason they didn't do that sooner was just to avoid, you know, two different clawbacks, you know, going ahead and clawing it back and then having to reapportion it if the court had come down the other way.
That makes sense. Thank you very much.
So I just, your opposing counsel told us that they had just been notified that you're going to do the same thing for the second half of tax year 2022. Is that correct?
I do believe that prior to this court's alternative writ, in this case, the second half tax year 2022 had been treated the same. After this court's alternative writ for this next settlement that's occurring in this spring, that's not happening based on our interpretation of the alternative writ establishing a temporary hold on our actions. And so until this court's decision, we'd be status quo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Schief, you've used your time, but I'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Chief Justice Kennedy. Very briefly, under 571522, and I won't belabor it, that relates to credits for overpayment. It doesn't regard collection of monies that were allegedly underpaid. I refer everyone back to the Attorney General opinions, unanimous, in that there is no such authority to do that. Justice DeWine, in regard to the mandamus issue, I do believe that we have, in essence, an anticipatory repudiation, and we have no adequate remedy at law, but I would point out that there's right now over $400,000 that has been withheld, and if nothing else, the mandamus should be ordered to order that to be repaid to OBETS. With that, unless there are any questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court. Thank you.